Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Well, good afternoon. You've reached Tim Wall, chairman of the VCOS. VCOS stands for the Volunteer Combination Officer Section of the IAFC. We have a website to go to get more information on the VCOS, www.vcos.org, to get some information on what the VCOS is doing and what we share with our members in the fire service. There's a lot of information on there, so I encourage you to go, get involved, attend our symposium, request one of our leadership courses. And something new that you're going to hear on this call is we've been working with ISO to offer some educational opportunities. And our guest panels for this afternoon is Chief Jeff Cash from Cherryville, North Carolina, Chief Joe Florentino, who's the Treasurer and Secretary for the VCOS from Little Elm, Texas, and also Chief Jerry Holt from Iowa. So, gentlemen, good afternoon, and welcome to the podcast for VCOS, and we'll be going over different topics. What I'd like to do to move it along is we'll spend a minute or two and just introduce who's on the panel. So we'll start with Chief Joe Florentino from Little Elm, Texas.
Thank you, Tim. Little Elm, located in the northern suburb of Dallas, for a combination fire department, career personnel, and volunteer. We serve, do about 2,000 runs, and we serve out of two stations, and look forward to the opportunity.
Well, thanks for being on, Chief Florentino, and appreciate taking your time out of your busy schedule to be on this panel today and have some discussion and some conversation with the other panel. With that, I'd like to introduce Chief Jeff Cash from Cherryville, North Carolina.
Thanks, Tim. Look forward to the opportunity to share with each other today. The City of Cherryville Fire Department is southwest of Charlotte, North Carolina, the metro area, and we have 48 total members of the department, 9 full-time career firefighters, 3 part-time, and the balance of volunteers run out of one station, and we protect about 5.8 square miles, and the population is just under 6,000, with the township being 14,000, and we run about 1,250 calls a year.
Well, welcome, Chief Cash. Appreciate your time and being on today, and look forward to hearing some of your fire service knowledge on some of the challenges that we have out there and how we can talk and discuss and maybe help some departments out there and some other chief officers. With that, I'd like to introduce the third member of the panel, Chief Jerry Holt, from Urbandale Fire Department in Urbandale, Iowa. Welcome, Chief Holt.
Thanks, Chief. I'm looking forward to hearing what everybody has to say. Urbandale is a combination department like everyone else. We serve a city of about 36,000 people with 38 members of our department. We have 15 full-time, counting myself, and the balance being 4 part-time, and the remaining are paid on call. We're not true volunteers, and like many departments, we are in transition, and we're seeing the need to add staff because of some of the problems in getting people. We have a high call volume of about 2,300 calls last year, and doing that with 38 people can certainly create its own challenges. I'm looking forward to hearing what everybody has to say.
Well, welcome, and I once again appreciate your time and sharing what you know and your knowledge to help the fire service. And once again, my name is Tim Wall. I'm a volunteer fire chief in Wallingford, Connecticut, from a combination department. I'm the district volunteer chief for North Farms Volunteer Fire Department. I also have the honor and the pleasure of serving as the chair of the VCOS, Volunteer Combination Officer Section of the IAFC. Today's topic and discussion with our panel are going to carry 4 to 5 different subject matters. One is about the best practices and things to do with, you know, encouraging, getting our volunteers, getting our firefighters to wear their seatbelts, and if they don't, what happens to them, or what can be done to educate them and show the importance of the seatbelt. We're also going to have a little discussion and a follow-up about the upcoming week with our partners with the IAFC, the EMS section, Health and Safety Survival section, and the IFF on the week that we talk about our commitment to a long-term results in reference to safety, where the IAFC, along with the other individuals that I just mentioned, not individuals but organizations, promote a week that we recommend to the fire service of having some activity to incorporate three key areas. The three key areas that we're trying to address, bring attention to, and awareness are fully implement NFPA 1500, especially addressing the PPE, on providing complete PPE, training and enforce use of PPE, fully implement the wellness and fitness initiative, along with the initiative of emergency vehicle policy that includes, and as I mentioned earlier, always buckle up, stop for red lights and stop signs, and drive, you know, your speed limits to your SOPs, SOGs, and, of course, defensively. And with that, I would like to let you know that this information that we're talking about is available on the IAFC website, and the week-long activities is in sponsorship with the IAFC and the IAFF, along with the IAFC Safety, Health, and Survival section, and there's numerous partners. And it's themed this year for 2008, Commitment to Long-Term Results. And you can go to the IAFC website to get that information. With our panel today, I'm going to ask them each a question, and maybe they can share some experience, what they may be doing in their department, and how our audience out here could maybe get an idea or a suggestion and help out. With that, I'd like to introduce Chief Cash. And one of the things we're trying to work with here, Chief Cash, is fully implement NFPA 1500, and especially sections addressing, and we're going to just focus on this topic today, PPE. And you know, how do you handle your provide complete PPE for your firefighters? What do you use to train, including respiratory protection? Can you share what you're doing in Cherryville?
Yes, thanks, Chief. We issue all our volunteers and career people the full ensemble of turnout gear that meets all of the NFPA standards. And we utilize the training through our local community college system that falls under NFPA 101 for personal protective equipment training, especially in the firefighter 1 and 2 area, and have pretty stringent SOGs regarding maintenance and cleaning of the PPE, and some pretty strict violations even with our volunteer firefighters about wearing their SCBA to the scene and their PPE.
Chief Cash, can you just share maybe if you find an individual, whoever, just a firefighter, we'll just blanket it that way, if for some reason you see someone maybe without a glasses at an extrication or safety glasses, or maybe their hood, what kind of actions or what kind is done by your personnel? Is it maybe addressed through the captain or is it a safety officer? Just to share with our audience.
Thanks, Chief. Yes, we utilize a strong system of encouragement at first, if you will, coaching. We're really trying to propagate a cultural change in our department about how critical PPE is for the firefighters. So at the company level or the safety officer level, either one on the scene, they're brought in after the incident. They're immediately asked to correct the situation on the scene. Then they're brought back to the station and a coaching event takes place with the firefighter. After that second event, they get to visit my office where some real serious coaching goes on, and it may lead to a suspension or dismissal from the fire department. We are very serious about PPE.
Thank you, Chief Cash, for sharing that. With that, I turn to Chief Jerry Holt from Iowa. Chief Holt, same question to you about the implementing NFPA 1500. We're talking about provide complete PPE, train, enforce use of PPE, and including respiratory protection. And how do you handle that in your department, sir?
Yeah, thanks, Chief. Pretty much the same way. We start our initial training where we really cover all of the components of what's required for the protective ensemble. And probably even before we get to that point, is we've really been effective, I think, in changing the culture in our department, and that it's almost that everybody's looking out for everybody else now. So if somebody's hood's not completely covering them, some other firefighter's pointing that out, and they're really looking after each other when they're on the scene to make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And it's rare that we have an occurrence where you see somebody that's not properly wearing their PPE. Same thing with the respiratory protection. We do the annual fit testing as well as the annual medical physicals to make sure that they're, you know, we're doing everything we can to try to keep them safe. And it seems that that culture has really taken hold here, so that everybody's looking after everybody. We don't have an issue where, like I said, it's really rare that we find that somebody is not wearing the appropriate level of protection. When that does happen, typically it's policed amongst themselves, but we would take it to the full level. If somebody refused to wear their SCBA waist strap, for example, or their hood, we would go through a similar process that Chief Cash mentioned of a coaching and then a counseling and then the progressive disciplinary to the point of discharge, because we feel so strongly about trying to keep everybody safe that we just can't tolerate somebody that's not going to do their part to help keep themselves safe.
Well, Chief Holt, that sounds like working well in your department, that everyone is trying to look after each other and help somebody if their strap isn't done by accident or the hood's got an exposure, which works out well. And that's very important that we do that. We help each other, look after each other, and protect each other. So, of course, you know, we all go home to our loved ones. Chief Holt, just a quick question on how your respiratory protection and testing, the procedures. How do you offer that? Do you do it yearly and you kind of rotate that someone who's trained in doing it goes out to your different stations, and how do you work your different shifts and your volunteers into getting their tests done?
That's correct, Chief. As we assign it to one of our lieutenants who is trained on the program. Essentially, it's done with the laptop and the face pieces that we use. And we coordinate it over a couple-week period so that we make sure that everybody has an opportunity to get into the station. We have two different stations, and typically on our training night, everybody comes to one station. So we try to coordinate it at that point, but knowing that everybody can't always get to that one training session. So we have a period over a couple of weeks that we allow to get the fit testing done. And the same would be true of the physicals, the pulmonary function test. We give them 4 weeks to get that done, and typically that's 4 weeks in March, so that we say that this is the day that you can start scheduling your physicals, that you schedule them. Here's the physician that we'll be using. You make arrangements at your convenience, but you've got 4 weeks to get it done. And we have run into this. We have to hold them accountable. So at the end of 4 weeks, if they haven't gotten that done, they're suspended from responding until they complete their physicals.
Oh, very good. Well, it seems you try to work with the individuals and the volunteers, the challenge of their job and their requirements, and getting it done, an accomplishment for the safer environment that we also want to portray to our volunteers when we do recruiting, or to all our firefighters when they bring in, especially to share with their family and their loved ones, knowing that the fire department through the town or their agency take proactive measures to, you know, get the best PPE, make sure everyone is protected, offer physicals, and get a base so that you have a history built up for your firefighter.
You're absolutely right, Chief, and it's also, you know, quite an expense to the fire department to make sure that we're doing the appropriate physicals and the fit test. So we kind of try to see it and approach it as a partnership, that we're making an investment in their safety, and in return we need our members to make sure that they're getting the things done when they're supposed to get them done, so that we can work together to keep them safe.
Chief Holt, that was a good statement, and compliment you on it. Very, very well said. Very well said. With that, I'd like to talk to Chief Joe Florentino from Little Elm, Texas. And Joe, you've heard the question, or Chief Florentino, you've heard the question, and you know, what's your measures that you do in your department? And I know your area is growing pretty much. So how do you stay up with providing for your firefighters complete PPE on a timely manner, along with the enforcement and the training?
Well, thank you, Chief. We of course supply fully compliant gear and ensembles to all our firefighters at the operation level. It's been a challenge budget-wise because our towns in these northern suburbs of Dallas have exploded. And as we picked up more personnel, career or volunteer, trying to keep up with even having backstock has been a real challenge. This state, I'm regulated by the Texas Commission on Fire Protection, and they've also adopted the 1851, which is the selection and care and maintenance of those ensembles, and that provides some pretty extensive inspections. And we are trying to maintain with our own personnel, getting certified and doing those inspections. On the fit tests and things, we don't have anybody certified in-house, but we're fortunate enough to have some neighboring fire departments that are, and we are able to rotate our crews in and out of their facilities to get those things done. On the compliance issues as far as wearing your PPE, we hold our company officers, anyone who's in charge of that vehicle where our firefighters are getting on and responding to the emergencies, that they're responsible for their crew to wear their gear. And we have adopted a saying, a few years back that every call you go on is a working fire until the officer tells you it's not. And then we all know that going to a working fire requires a full ensemble, and you better come off that truck with your full ensemble. And we've had excellent compliance with that. And I think even the firefighters find a relief that, let's start with everything, and we can work our way back if that's what the situation is going to be. So, and again, just like the other chiefs were saying, we use a progressive type discipline process, but it also includes the officer. It just doesn't include the firefighter that maybe is missing the gear. So.
Well, thanks, Chief Joe Florentino. A question on, it seems to work well with you. So you kind of have like a partner with either surrounding towns or your mutual aid companies in a way to help you with the fit testing. Is that correct?
That is correct, and it's fostered through a couple of different things. Not only do the group of us here on one side of the county try to meet on a regular basis, either for lunch or just at someone's office to talk about what's going on, but we have a very strong County Fire Chiefs Association, and resources are shared between some of the departments that have equipment that others can't afford. And that's the only way, really, in this type of climate that we can get things done on a regular basis.
Thank you, Chief. And addressing your PPE for your membership, how does that kind of work? Do you basically outfit your department, Chief, and then how do you rotate new PPE in? Do you do it through an annual budget? And do you do I'll use the term six set of gears, or, how do you coordinate your new membership coming in or new member? To be fair to everyone, how do you kind of share that or work
sure.
with that?
And we go on it's a rotation process, and we have our B shift handles PPE and uniforms. And basically they have their charts, and it's gone through when gear is issued and when it's supposed to be replaced. And it started out initially a few years back as a seniority rotation. Now it's done on the age of when you got your gear and what your needs are. So, and that's how we try to rotate the gear through. So,
okay. Very good, Chief. Thank you for sharing that. And on that subject matter, Chief Cash, Chief Holt, or Chief Florentino, before we move on to the next, anything you want to add after hearing the other panel discussion point that we might have missed?
Well, the
Chief
one thing,
Holt.
Ms. Chief Holt, one thing that I would add is just to kind of the change that has taken place. If you can remember, 20 years ago, nobody wanted clean gear. And I think culturally we've got it in people's minds, and that the cancer causing agents that are on their gear. So people are actually, at least in our department, have changed, and it's not a sin to have clean gear. And one of the other things that we've done to try to make it, to stay on top of things is something as simple as if they want leather boots. If they've been here 5 years, then we'll pay for their leather boots. If they've been here less than 5 years and they want leather boots, we'll pay the cost of the rubber boots, and they can pay the difference so they can go ahead and get them now. But, again, just something to try to get them into wanting to get the new gear, the better gear.
Thanks, Chief Holt. I heard someone else maybe come on that wanted to share something.
Yeah, Chief Wall, it's Chief Cash. The comment one of the gentlemen made about the process for fit testing and testing of the SBA. We have tried to do it as a county as well and didn't find that to be so successful. So what we ended up doing here locally was go with a third-party testing agency. A company comes in and performs those tests for us, and it works great and provides great documentation that an outside contractor comes in and provide those tests for our people.
Very good. Thanks for sharing that. And here in Wallingford, of a combination department of career and volunteers, we do the same, a rotation basing to each station. We try to pick a night, and we do a kind of a makeup. We actually have a trailer that goes from site to site, and this year we've expanded to the training office that we've shared how to do the testing, how to work the computer, and more people know what goes on. It helps with the flow, and which is good, and we share that. So thanks, gentlemen, on that portion of sharing our safety week that is coming up, and a reminder to our listeners that the 2008 Fire EMS Safety Health and Survival Week is coming up very shortly, June 22nd to the 28th, and that we're highlighting through the efforts of the IAFC, IAFF, and the IFC Safety, Health, and Survival section, along with many partners. You can go in and look at the partners on the website, Commitment to Long-Term Results. With that, it leads into our next question for our panel. We're going to look at fully implementing wellness and fitness initiatives that you may have in your department that our panel could share, or maybe they do different things. We're looking at provide annual medical and physical evaluations. We kind of touched upon that a little bit in our previous question. Also provide equipment, time to exercise, along with some nutrition information and maybe some other health safety checks. So with that, I'd like to I'll ask this question first to Chief Jerry Holt from Iowa. So Chief Holt, can you share with us what you're doing in your department or maybe some things that you're looking to do for your department?
Sure, Chief. I'd be happy to do that. One of the things that we've done, we have initiated the full NFPA physical on an annual basis. And, again, it's become such a part of what you do every year that it's just it goes without even being noticed anymore. It's kind of interesting. When we first started doing that, I don't know, about 7 years ago, there was actually some resistance. People didn't want to do a physical. And I don't think it was because they didn't want to find anything. It was just a time commitment thing. And again, the way we've tried to manage that is by giving them more than, you know, a couple opportunities to get that physical done. We give 4 weeks. We used to give 6 weeks, and we'd find people still would put it off and not do it until the last 4 weeks, so we kind of brought that down. Some of the other things that we're doing is we do allow, we have workout gear at one of our stations, and we will actually pay our paid-on-call staff to come to the station for an hour to do a workout. They'll get paid, and we figure they're here, they're able to respond, and they're working out, certainly doing something that will better their health. As well as our paid staff, which is a unionized group, we have negotiated through the union contract that they have an hour every day that they're on duty that they are allowed to do physical training. I say allowed. It's more of they have an hour a day that's expected for them to do that. And also, we certainly don't have any problem with them doing above and beyond that as long as the work schedule allows it. So we really encourage them to do that. Fortunately, we're getting a lot of people that seem to be a lot more health and safety conscious than what it used to be in the past. So they're kind of goating each other on what they're eating and how they take care of themselves. I know we had a half marathon last week, and we had a couple of our people that participated in that. So we're getting them where they're a little bit more interested in that. And as they look at, I mean, all of our guys are just like everybody else's guys. They look at all the line of duty deaths and see the high percentage of those that are heart attacks and, you know, unfortunately could probably be prevented and people control their diet and people control their exercise and catch some of the things that we do with our physicals. So I think everybody's bought into that and is a little bit more apt to do it today than they were, say, just 7 years ago.
And what do you think that is with Chief Holt? Maybe the education, the past several years of pushing nutrition, safety, or the awareness, the education?
Yes, Chief, I do think that's it. I think probably one of the things that really strikes home more than anything else is looking at the line of duty deaths. We pay so much more attention to that, and everybody's aware of the 16 initiatives and trying to cut down on line of duty deaths. And at least in our department, we're not seeing a lot of things. I mean, God forbid we could have something bad happen today, but it's the health and safety that seems to be the concentration. We seem to have the operational stuff well in hand. Not that it's ever perfect. By no means it's not, but they see that these other firefighters are dying from heart attacks, and by far that seems to be the leading cause that you can say, well, this certainly is one of the issues. So unfortunately, a death of another firefighter reinforces what it is that we're trying to get our message out, that the health and their health and safety is so important that, you know, we don't want people to have a heart attack. Unfortunately, we have lost a firefighter in line of duty to a heart attack several years ago. That also is a, you know, pretty powerful point for our department, because it didn't happen somewhere else. It happened in our department, and certainly that got everybody's attention. Those things are, you know, can be used to motivate, and fortunately something good can happen from losing, you know, one of your own.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Chief Holt, and, you know, how important that is. And you raise something that through this information that the 16 life safety initiatives are available. There's some initiatives that you can look at, remind your membership, remind your department, take some of those initiatives and put them into your daily routine, some of your training exercise, and that organization did a tremendous job with those 16 life safety initiatives. With that, Chief Jeff Cash from Cherryville, North Carolina. Chief, we're talking about the wellness and fitness initiatives that maybe you have in your department, or some things that you see that can be done or maybe should be done. I'm sure there's always a challenge, Chief, of cost factors. Also, getting people to feel comfortable with going for a physical, firefighters going for a physical, or maybe sitting in on having a speaker come in to talk about nutrition, to talk about taking care of yourself, talk about some other diseases that are out there, you know, promoting early awareness. Chief, can you share with how you address your physicals evaluations, what you do yearly, and maybe some initiatives you may do in your department, Chief?
Be glad to, Chief Wall. And they're very similar to Chief Holt's. We provide an annual physical for all of our staff. And once again, we do a third-party contractor to come in and perform those physicals, and they're based on the NFPA standard. And we allow the guys and ladies on duty an hour to participate in the exercise of their choosing on their 24-hour shift, because we work a 24-48 schedule, and encourage all the volunteers to take part as well. And we have noticed that it's another cultural change for our fire department. The average age of our department is 37 years old. So with the older population, they were somewhat resistive to the physical fitness program. But with that, a lot of the younger folks coming in were real physically minded. We have truly seen a generational issue there about the physical fitness. And now the older folks are trying to compete with the younger folks and try to be as physically fit as possible. And it works out great. We just built a new facility, which has made it much more workable. We plan for a large physical fitness PT room in the new station, and it has been truly an asset to help foster this program. And for the paid employees, it is a factor monetarily as they participate in the wellness and fitness program, which is whole body, we like to call it, not only the physical fitness, but trying to eat heart healthy and maintain an active lifestyle. It is shows up in their merit and pay increases. So there's a motivational factor there that they're all interested in.
Well, it seems to work with your organization and a buy-in, it looks, sounds like, Chief Cash.
That's true. Buy-in was slow, but now we're so proud of the level that the buy-in has got to. And like I said, it's now somewhat of a challenge to the older troops versus the younger troops, and they've made it kind of a competition. And the physicals that we do have pointed out some serious issues with some of our personnel, so they have taken it very seriously and tried to correct those problems that they've found, that the doctors have found, and, you know, high cholesterol and weight gain, excessive weight gain. So they're working very hard to try to bring their physical fitness levels into an acceptable range.
Thank you, Chief Cash. And also, Chief Cash, I know you're also involved with another organization that promotes healthy awareness to the fire service. Can you spend a minute or two about the National Volunteer Fire Council initiatives that offer a wonderful program?
Yeah, the NVFC is very proud of its Heart Healthy Firefighter Program. As a matter of fact, we'll be participating in the Health Village at the conference, the Fire and Rescue International in Denver, along with other agencies and organizations, and we'll be doing the blood pressure screening and cholesterol screening. It's been very successful at the trade shows across the United States for the past 4 or 5 years, and we have found that there are firefighters that attend the trade shows that have some serious health problems, some serious health issues. High blood pressure and high cholesterol seem to be the two leading factors, and then we give them information to encourage them to promote a healthy lifestyle through diet and exercise, and it's been very successful and a very workable program.
Chief Cash, just a quick point on that. We see them at the trade shows that are going on, and the IFC's Fire Rescue International is going to be hosted in August the 14th through the 16th, which is going to be in Denver, Colorado. For those who are interested in attending the FRI, Fire Rescue International, promoted by the International Association of Fire Chiefs, you see that booth set up, and you know, from your experience and people going through, I know there's like a yellow button that they put on, and I've had the yellow button put on. How long does it take for them to go through?
As trade shows go, and everyone knows, there are busier times and then there are slower times. Usually it's about a 14 to 16 minute wait and process, unless the lines are, you know, extremely heavy, and they come in and go through the different stages of the process and are reported out the results immediately. Our tests are a non-fasting type test, and there's counselors there that privately share those results with the attendees, and it gives them a good perspective on what they need to do when they return home.
Okay. And that information and the promotion of their safety initiative is available on the NVFC's website?
Yeah, that's correct, and it's www.nvfc.org.
Thank you very much, Chief Cash, for sharing that. With that, and the topic we're talking about again is information, and we'll turn it over to Chief Joe Florentino on wellness and fitness initiatives. Go ahead, Chief Florentino.
Thank you, Chief Wall. The annual medical and physical evaluations have been a challenge here, and we do not offer those as of yet. We have it in as a proposal, again, for this budget cycle. We also have it in our latest Fire Act grant, which is under review for the complete physicals. So that is something, you know, hey, we're still looking to do. We want to do. We're presenting it. And it largely just comes down to a financial issue with our town. I think they want to get it done, too. I think it's just finding the appropriate funds at this time has been a huge challenge. Where we have been supportive is our brand new station, Station 2, has our first official equipment and exercise room, which we've been very pleased with, and we seem to have outfitted it nicely. We've added some things over the last couple of months to enhance that, and we do, similar to Chief Cash, we do the 24/48, and we encourage and we give ample time for the exercise on each shift. So we have discussed in even last year's in this when it was called Safety Stand Down, and we'll do it again. We go over healthy meals and eating and nutrition information, and we are looking into sending a few of our members to the peer fitness training so we can bring and implement some in-house programs for next year. So those are some of the things that we're doing on the wellness and fitness.
Thank you, Chief Florentino. And looking at the topic, and I think some of it can be done, you know, Chief Florentino talked about the costs, but maybe you can work with your surrounding community or your mutual aid partners, and I'm just going to look at one topic that they talked about, you know, provide nutrition information. I'm sure with your organization you can reach out to a local health director or maybe a state level or even county, it may be your department can get together with your mutual aid partners and have a night of a speaker that can come talk on about some eating habits, some sleeping habits that affect the firefighters in any way. And, you know, if there is a cost, there's a great way to break up the cost to your members, and it's not impacting your budget a lot, hopefully not. But also it's reaching more firefighters. And maybe something to do is on the nutrition information, open an offer to your members' family. Have them come in. What do you think on that, Chief Cash?
We did that very thing, Chief Wall. We contacted the large metro hospital in our area, Carolina's Medical Center, and they provided a nutritionist, and she brought over samples and sample recipes and discussed eating heart healthy, and we did invite the families, majority of them were their spouses, and it seemed to go over very well, and it's even motivated us here at locally to maybe quit frying the southern fried chicken and start grilling some chicken breast.
There you go. Some way to still meet your appetite, but also try to eat a little healthier. Chief Holt, Chief Florentino, any other suggestions on this topic that we kind of mentioned and discussed before we go on to our third topic?
Well, sounds like it's pretty well covered.
Chief Florentino, it was an excellent point, Tim, and we have contacted, they helped us with the grant, is the Cooper Institute, and we're fortunate to have them here in the Dallas area. And they have quite a comprehensive wellness and fitness program, and they never even thought about the fire service till a couple of years ago when the fire service started approaching them, and now they have a whole program that's just geared towards the fire service. And they have now, which is wonderful, they have broken out some programs. You can bring in nutritionists, and they have, I think, have brought the cost down to very reasonable, and which is giving us, some of the smaller departments, an opportunity to do some of these things. So, we got that information through actually talking with other fire departments who are in the same kind of predicament that I am monetarily. And we're looking forward to working with them next year.
Now I'll go on to our next topic. And if you just joined listening in, my name is Tim Wall, chair of the VCOS, Healthcare Combination Officer Section. Information is available on the VCOS website. You can go directly to the website or go to the IAFC website and link over to the Volunteer Combination Officer Section. And before we go into our next topic, one of the things that the organization is working on, the board of directors and our committee, is we have our symposium in the sun coming up. It's a great opportunity to come to Florida. It's going to be held this year, October 30th through November 2nd in Clearwater, Florida. It's an opportunity to come in and mingle and learn some subject matters. We actually take over the entire hotel. So everywhere you go, you'll meet a colleague or a friend or someone who's been to a symposium before. And we have breakout sessions for our topics. Our symposium for the past 10 years have been very successful and continue to grow. You'll have an opportunity to be with 400 or so chief officers throughout the United States and internationally to attend a opportunity for some education. And I know Chief Cash, you had an opportunity to be there last year.
It was a great experience. It was my first symposium in the sun, and it was awesome opportunity for networking, for learning, and just meeting new people and sharing ideas from across our country, and it was an awesome experience.
So we encourage everyone to look that up. Go to the VCOS website, and you can do online registration as we talk or you hear this podcast. Coming back to another topic we're going to talk about, it's emergency vehicle policies that include, of course, always buckle up, wear your seatbelt. It's the law. And firefighters aren't different from the public on wearing their seatbelts. Along with always stop at red lights and stop signs, drive at a speed limit and defensively. As you know, even in our everyday travels to and from work or our personal life, we see people either don't stop for a stop sign or run a light, and encouragement of being a defensive driver. So with that, I'll open up. I know Chief Jeff Cash from Cherryville, North Carolina, is doing some things in North Carolina about the seatbelt pledge, the national campaign that firefighters take the pledge, take a pledge, that I believe started from a firefighter in Texas who tragically lost his life. So with that, Chief Cash, can you share, first of all, let's talk about a little bit about the seatbelt pledge, wearing your seatbelt, buckle up, and what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Thanks, Chief Wall. We're really excited about some things going on because North Carolina has something that we're not too proud of in the United States. We have had a large number of LODDs that were attributed to vehicle incidents. For example, since 2006, North Carolina has experienced 23 line-of-duty deaths. Recently in Salisbury, North Carolina, two of those were from an actual fire-related incident. 10 were cardiac-related, and 11 of them were vehicle-related, and only one of those 11 individuals had on a seatbelt. So we decided to do something about it and quit giving it lip service. So we adopted a position paper at the state level through our North Carolina State Firemen's Association, published that heavily, and encouraging people to take part in the National Seatbelt Pledge. And, you know, that came from Christopher Brian Hutton in Amarillo, Texas, where he fell out of the fire truck and 2 days later died from his injuries. And Dr. Burt Clark at the National Fire Academy kind of developed the program and got it up and running where you can actually go onto the website through the USFA and have your individual members of your department sign the National Seatbelt Pledge, and then the name of your department will go on the website that you're 100% compliant. It's an awesome program. So we've taken it a step further in North Carolina. We have three regions in North Carolina. There are approximately 1,344 departments in our state, and they're divided into three regions. And the three regions meet quarterly, and we've placed a challenge upon the three regions to see which region will can sign up the most departments between now and next August, which is our annual conference, and this is going over extremely well. We have a large corporate sponsor going to make a gift in the way of cash that regional association can use for a computer or a scholarship, whatever the region elects to use the prize money, with the overall effort and goal to get as many people across our state signed up to the seatbelt pledge to reduce the number of vehicle-related deaths in North Carolina.
Well, it sounds like you guys are, your departments and your agencies are working together for a good cause. And Chief Cash, maybe how do you handle it in your department, SOPs, SOGs? What do you have about red lights, stop signs, you know, speed limits? How do you handle that? And can you tag on, Chief Cash, while you're talking, is what if, you know, you observe or someone observes a vehicle that inappropriately went through an intersection? How do you kind of handle that, Chief?
The first part of your question, Chief Wall, is, yeah, they're related to our SOGs about stopping at stoplights and only proceeding through once it's completely safe, and bringing the emergency vehicle to a complete stop, and having everyone in the cab of the truck to visualize that the intersection is safe, utilizing the posted speed limit, as well as a on-the-quiet response for certain level of emergencies, non-emergencies, mostly that we've aligned in our policy. And we've really tried to make a special emphasis on response of privately owned vehicles that our volunteers respond from their home to the scene. As I alluded to earlier, the North Carolina situation is that a lot of those deaths were occurring in privately owned vehicles while responding or returning from calls. So we've tried to focus some education and coaching along the lines of the volunteers that are responding in their personal vehicle. Part two of the question, if we do get a report from a citizen or another firefighter of someone busting red lights, and it's got to where that's rare now because we've tried to develop that culture within our department that we can't help the people on the scene who need our assistance unless we arrive there safely. We take the same kind of action that we discussed about PPE. We'll bring that individual in and his company officer or the safety officer, if the safety officer noted the violation, for a coaching event and encouraging and education on why it's critical and why it's important, and then subsequent issues then can result in disciplinary action or dismissal. And you know, Chief, while it's almost a no-brainer that we're having to do this, because not only is it state law, it's city and departmental policy. So there you go. We need to wear our seatbelt.
Thank you, Chief Cash, for sharing that. And what I've kind of gotten in the habit of doing when I'm on the apparatus and riding is I do it clear. Okay, everyone, seatbelts on, seatbelted. In my own mind, that's what I've learned. Wallingford Fire Department has, you know, emphasized wearing seatbelts and proactive driving and response. But that's what I, in my own mind, I've done to my crew, whether I'm the driver or the officer, and just kind of say, everybody ready to go? Which I'm sure everyone out there does things differently, but that's what I've learned and done and do here in North Farms. Chief Florentino, on the initiative emergency vehicle policies, procedures, and things you're doing you could share or with our audience.
Thank you. Chief, yes, we have very strict guidelines on the buckle up policy. We have, you know, some of the older engines back before we went and got you know, the red markers before they changed it to make sure everyone knew. It's an absolutely 100% again, gotta be buckled up. We hold again the officer in the mix when we're doing the discipline process, if we have to do one. But we're proud to say that we're, last year when we had the safety stand down, we did the seatbelt pledge and we got 100% compliance on that. We have the same thing, similar to Chief Cash. We stop at all the red lights and all the stop signs. And again, it's all written in the SOGs, the same thing about driving at the speed limits and defensively. So we try to be as aggressive as we can. I know there are certain shifts, and shifts officers each have their own way of how they get compliance or how they've talked to their shifts. But we've had an incident here, and we've had several incidents in this county, thankfully not here at our department, but where there have been wrecks in engines. And thankfully, each firefighter had been buckled up and no major injuries to occur. So I think it's real. I think my firefighters understand that. And so far, we've had very good compliance with those issues.
Thank you, Chief Florentino. Now with that, we go to our third member of our panel, and we're emphasizing 2008 Fire EMS Safety, Health, and Survival Week, scheduled for June 22nd through the 28th, with your fire department, your shifts, your platoons, your crews, and a week-long event that you can plan, and they're available on the IAFC website. And along with that, the IAFC encourage you to share back to the IAFC, whether photos or a brief outline of what you did for your department and how you embraced, how you educated, and what you demonstrated to the commitment to long-term results for safety, health, and survival within the fire and EMS service. With that, Chief Jerry Holt from Iowa, on the initiative on initiating emergency vehicle policy, buckling up, your red lights, stop signs, your offensive, defensive, and maybe Chief Holt, if you also can maybe mention in your answering is, you know, how do you do your training for your vehicles as individuals? Come on, if you can share with us on the panel along with the audience, maybe some of the things you look for how do you sign your driver off? How do you do that also, please, Chief Holt?
Sure, be happy to answer that. I think the other two have excellent programs, and this is something that I'm just very passionate about. There's not a week goes by that we don't get an email of something occurring somewhere that was highly predictable and then, as such, highly preventable when it comes to driving apparatus. It's one of the things that we're very concerned when we hire a new person. In fact, we look closely at their driving history before we even allow them to be a member of our department. So So someone that had three speeding tickets within the last 3 years may not even be eligible to be hired in our department because we're looking for patterns of how they drive. And certainly there are some people who think, you know, joining the fire department and being able to drive a big fire truck with red lights and sirens is pretty cool. I see it as an awesome responsibility. Some of the things that we do is we have an initial training session, and then we do an annual emergency vehicle operators course with where they have to drive and go through the course as well as the classroom session to make sure that we're keeping them all up. As far as our seatbelts goes, we have the same policy as Chief Cash and Chief Florentino that the apparatus doesn't move unless the officer sitting in the officer seat has an accountability tag and a check on everybody's seatbelt that everybody is properly belted in. In fact, the new apparatus that we buy now has the system that will notify them if there's a seatbelt that's not buckled. Of course, we all know there's ways to get around those. But again, I think the culture in our department is pretty strong, and I feel we have 100% compliance on seatbelts. As to driving emergency vehicles, we do stop at all red lights and intersections. We teamed up recently with a local news channel to cover just that issue based on some events that had happened around the country. And I don't know, there was a video from Inside Edition several years ago called Russian to the Rescue that we kind of took a similar approach to see what was happening in our area. And fortunately, after about a month of video, and they only were able to get a few apparatus going through red lights. None, I'm happy to say, were from my department, but nonetheless, it still happened somewhere. The culture such in our department that's with the advent of YouTube, our people are going out and seeing what other people are doing, and it's frequently that I get an email say, hey, check this video out. And that's one of the things that truly blows me away as we talk about seatbelts and driving safety. You can look on YouTube and just do a search for fire engine response, and you will see some responses that will truly make you pull your hair out. People that are driving way too fast, going through red lights without slowing down. And that's the culture we have to change. And I think what's one of the most things that's concerning to me is reading some of the responses that the viewers post to those YouTube videos about, wow, that was cool. You guys really rock. You drive good. And I'm like, oh, no. The chief of this department can't see this video. He'd probably have a heart attack because some of them are, quite frankly, just that bad. We've all probably viewed those where you have a person driving a fire truck goes through six red lights, and some of those red lights were barely even slowing down. So, you know, I think it's a bigger cultural thing that we have to change, that it's not okay to put other people's lives at risk. And I think Chief Florentino said it earlier that if you don't arrive, you can't help the person that you're supposed to be helping. So we got to change the culture, and I think we got a lot more work to do fire service-wide to get people in tune with it's not okay to go through an intersection without slowing down.
Thank you, Chief Holt, for sharing that information. And that's right. We have a responsibility, first of all, as officers of your department, that, you know, everyone goes home safely along with whoever's driving or the officer, the apparatus or rig, that he or she has an understanding that, you know, we have to be cautious. And you also talked about another thing that's out there, Chief Holt, is you know, there's a lot of cameras no matter where we go, whether it's responding at a scene or an emergency. You never know who's recording you. So professionalism is an utmost. With that, we've talked about three subject matters, saying that coming up for the week of June 22nd to the 28th, 2008, it's a commitment to long-term results on fire and EMS safety, health, and survival. Again, it's sponsored by the IAFC, IAFF, and the IAFC Safety, Health, and Survival section of the IAFC. And once again, there's many partners that are involved. This is an initiative that will focus on these key safety areas from Monday to a Saturday. We want to provide maximum flexibility, allow for, you know, duty shifts, career and volunteer to participate in your department's selected exercise during this safety week. And you make it float because not everyone meets on a Monday, not everyone drills on a Wednesday. Your platoon may be off on Friday. But hopefully with individuals fire departments, training officers, chief officers, or firefighters can get from this safety week. You can go in there and learn something and carry the message along. Don't stop for the week of June 22nd through the 28th. Make it part of your monthly meeting. Address something. We mentioned earlier something about the 16 initiatives. Talked about them. Grab one of the initiatives. Have a tailboard discussion, a cup of coffee at a table, and talk about some things that are out there so you can help and improve your department, share a success story, and once again, it improves the environment of your department, but also helps with the health and safety of all personnel.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Okay, Chiefs, a question from Chief Tim Wall, Chair of the VCOS. This time of year is upon us, and you'll see and be aware, and along with the fire service through various websites and information, the Fire Safer grants are available. The grant application period has been open since May 27th. We'll be closing on June 27th. In a way, looking through the panel and the information we'll get out on this podcast, encouraging the fire service department, town, fire chief, chief officers to look at the Fire Safe grants and apply. And you have an opportunity in several ways to receive some money. The keys to the Safer grant is to fund two activities. And I think one people look at and they say, well, maybe we can't do that, and that's the hiring of firefighters through the grant. But looking at the second one, the recruitment and retention of volunteer firefighters to come up with a program to help their department grow, and how do you not only recruit new members, but how do you keep the retention in the volunteer fire service? With that, I'll introduce Chief Holt from Iowa. Maybe your experience or what you know about the Fire Safer grants, and hopefully you've applied, Chief.
Yes, Chief Holt, I have applied, and I'm in the process of going after it again. You know, this year's funding is set at $190 million, and as far as the volunteer and combination department, 10% of that has to go to volunteer and combination departments, and an additional 10% has to go to fund retention and recruitment activities. So there's certainly an opportunity for volunteer and combination departments to have something special in this process. The process I've gone through in the past is a painless process. It's all done online. You have to get the figures together, but as far as, you know, being a painful process, that's not true. It's a pretty easy thing to do. And, you know, I would say to anybody that applies and don't get it is don't give up. I think the worst thing that we can do as a fire service is have this money out there and have people get a defeatist attitude and not want to make the effort and send the message to the community that, well, they must not need it too bad because they're not going after these funds. I think the work that you put into an application process is certainly will be rewarded if you get a safer grant. If you don't, you try to learn what you did wrong and what you can do better. I know a local department close to us recently was awarded a safer grant from the last go-round, and I've met with them and trying to figure out what it is that they did right and compared to what I did wrong and try to go and see if I can improve on that during this current application period.
Well, Chief Holt, that's a good opportunity to meet your have a good conversation with your fellow fire chief or your neighboring community and have a good discussion over lunch or a cup of coffee. As we know, the Safer Grants was created by Congress in 2003, the intention to help communities with career and volunteer combination fire departments, help in order to respond to emergencies wherever they may occur, assuring that their communities have protection for fire and other fire-related hazards. Once again, Congress created this opportunity in 2003. And in this conversation with our panel today, we're encouraging the volunteer and combination departments to apply for these grants or review them and look at them and maybe an opportunity to help your community. Chief Joe Florentino from Little Elm, Texas. As you're aware, the fire grants are open and out. They were released on May 27th, and they're available till June 27th. Safer Grants information for the application. Chief Florentino, where do you find information, and how would you do your research Have you experienced the opportunity to apply for a grant?
Yes, we've applied for the SAFER grant in each cycle since it's been offered. We've done the same thing as Chief Holt. We've had several departments in the county been successful, and we've met with them and tried to, focus down on, what they were emphasizing in the grant process and try to use that in our applications. So we've attended even the workshops. And again, for this year, we're looking at the applying.
Well, Chief Florentino, if you do apply, wish you luck on your research and the opportunity. And Chief Florentino, where do you find the information on applying for the grants? Or which various websites, or how do you go about it? The IFCs, or?
Yeah, through the IFC and some of the information that they have there, the firegrantsupport.com under SAFER. And you'll get the complete program guidance and the tutorial also on that website.
And so the opportunity is we can't just call like a 1-800 number and say, hi, this is Chief such and such and from XYZ Fire Department, and we'd like to apply for the grant. There is a written process, Chief Florentino?
There is a written process. They also, on that same firegrantsupport.com, has the grant frequently asked questions, and they also have a help desk, and they also have an email address. So there's several ways that you can find information.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Chief Florentino. You may have to go on a computer and do a little information, but I guess it's all available there for those who would like to seek out the possibility of a Fire SAFER grant. Chief Cash, on SAFER grants and the opportunity to, we talked about the two activities that they're looking at. One is the hiring of firefighters, and the other one is the recruitment and retention for volunteer firefighters. And let's take the second part with this first conversation, is the recruiting and retention of volunteer firefighters. Have you had the opportunity, Chief Cash, to apply, and how did you feel about the process?
Yes, Chief. While we have applied, and a couple years ago we were successful on one of the SAFER grants under the recruitment and retention category. We applied on behalf of our entire state and won a grant to produce a recruitment and retention video and some television radio commercial spots that was aired all across North Carolina and was a very great tool in helping departments statewide with their recruiting and retention efforts. We found the process to be very easy. The online tutorial was excellent, and we utilized a tutorial off of FEMA's website, and the firegrantsupport.com website was very helpful. And there's drop-down menus that are self-explanatory. Probably the hardest part is the narrative, and there's so many helpful hints and sample narratives that you can get your hands on to help guide you through the process. And I would encourage all combination volunteer fire departments to apply under the recruitment and retention section, because there is no federal match in that category. So it's critical that we apply.
Chief Cash, do you think that's maybe the fire service doesn't understand, as you raised the key point about the recruitment and retention of the volunteer firefighter and some assistance, there's no matching grant to that?
That's correct. There is no federal matching grant on the recruitment and retention portion of the SAFER grant.
Well, we have the fire service thank Congress and of course the president for the continuing funding. And Tim Wall would like to share that I think a key point is to the audience listening, is that if you do apply for a grant, let your legislators know that you have. And of course, and I'm sure they're doing this, if you do receive a grant for your department and your community, let it be known, and thank our elected officials, federal officials, for their guidance and their help of creating this that Congress did in 2003, but also the continuing of funding this important grant, or the important grants for the entire fire service. And with that, I'd like to just say thank you very much to the panel today, and we'll do a closeout on our podcast broadcast today on Friday, June 6th. So with that, I'd like to close out with Chief Jeff Cash from Cherryville, North Carolina.
Thanks, Chief Wall. It's been a fantastic opportunity to share and learn myself today with this distinguished panel, and thank the VCOS for allowing me to participate.
You're quite welcome, Chief Cash. Chief Joe Florentino from Little Elm, Texas.
Thank you, Chief Wall. I do appreciate the time, and it's been informative. I've learned some from my other panel members and taking notes. And I want to emphasize also, again, what you touched upon is the Symposium in the Sun, and it's how I got involved with this organization. So the emphasis that is placed on management and current issues in the fire service has been impressive to me through the IFC and the VCOS. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chief Joe Florentino. With that, we have our third panelist, Chief Jerry Holt from Urbandale Fire Department in Urbandale, Iowa. Chief Holt.
I'd too like to thank you, Chief Wall, for giving me this opportunity, you and VCOS for getting this process out there and getting the word out. Chief Cash, Chief Florentino both did an excellent job and had some great points. Probably the closing thing that I'd like to leave everybody with is the culture that we need to change starts with our organizations, and it can sometimes be a challenging process, but I just encourage everybody to keep ticking at it, that you do it long enough, we'll get people to buy into those things that will truly make a difference, make sure that all of our people get back to the fire station safely and then get home. It's a worthy cause, and I know that most of the people that are on this, all the people on the panel and probably most of the people out there share that passion, that we want to make sure that our people get home and that we identify those things that are highly predictable. And if it's highly predictable, we do what we can to prevent those things from happening. So I, again, appreciate the opportunity to be part of the panel.
Thank you, Chief Holt. Chiefs, thank you very much for joining us today. We've talked about four or five important subject matters. One is the reminder that the Fire Safer Grants are available to you until June 27th, 2008. Go on various websites to find the information. Chief Florentino mentioned that there's also the available through a website, Fire Grant Support. You can research there. And again, coming upon us for the week of June 22nd through the 28th, it's a commitment to long-term results, promotion of fire EMS safety, health, and survival within the fire service. And we've kicked around or talked about three key areas that we wanted people to, or we want fire departments to participate in: fully implementing NFPA 1500, fully implementing a wellness and fitness initiative, initiate an emergency vehicle policy to include various subject matters.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.